Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be taking your calls and responding to your email questions. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael. You have to become much, much louder than you are.
I will talk much louder. How's that?
You're still very, very far away, but...
Very far away.
I will listen. I will attend carefully.
Great. And I will speak as loud as I can.
All right.
Hey, I was wondering if you have any plans for Saturday.
Well, I do. As a matter of fact, I'm going to an extraordinary party.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Can I come?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, great.
You are invited. Everyone listening is invited. Everyone who knows or has ever heard of everyone who's listening is invited. We're going to gather at Chrissy Field at the base of... the Golden Gate Bridge, and we're going to have lunch together, and we're going to do all sorts of fun activities and have yoga and treats and snacks, and then we're going to walk across the bridge in our spiff new T-shirts and like that, and we're going to raise thousands and thousands of dollars to feed and educate folks in a wonderful little village in Africa.
Wow. That sounds fabulous.
Yeah.
Great.
Sounds like a good time, doesn't it?
It's going to be a great time.
Yeah.
Fifth annual Golden Gate Bridge Walk.
Yes. And, you know, we had as our goal 500 people, and we're probably a little bit beyond half of that.
Yes.
So that gives us something to shoot for then next year. We're gonna hit 500 next year. Possibly more, but the response to this year's walk has just been tremendous. And, you know, we're inviting everybody who comes to bring a little backpack for one of the kids and put a little Tupperware container and a plastic bottle with a lid for their drink and put some little school supplies in and things like that. And people have been responding with that, and it's just fun.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too.
And if people haven't heard about it, they can go online to the website, livingcompassion.org, and everything is all there.
Everything is there. There are pictures of the 100 kids that we are currently caring for and an opportunity to partner with one of them. I think there might still be a few left that don't have partners at this point, but a very few, blessedly. And... yeah, see a video of them and learn all about it, and then join us. Join
Great.
Us in spirit, if not in the flesh.
Yes, yes.
I spoke with a woman this morning who was expressing her disappointment because she and her children had signed up, and then something has come up that is preventing them from being able to be there. And she said, but, you know, we're going to get up in the morning, and we're going to watch the video, and then we're going to go for a walk, and we're just going to be there with you in our hearts. And I said, well, heck, that sounds like a good deal, too.
Yes, yes. And I understand that people all over the country are doing their own events.
They are, yeah. Many, many wonderful things are happening on that day where people are getting together and doing fundraisers and just all kinds of in solidarity sorts of activities. And, you know, it doesn't have to stop on Saturday.
Yes.
Many people, in fact, have contacted us, and they have events scheduled out in the future, but they're still to benefit you know, they're still for the bridge walk. So
great.
This part of our, you know, our fundraising endeavor. So
great.
Yeah, whatever anybody can do, we sure appreciate. And goodness knows it goes for a good cause. There aren't too many better things, I think, to do with our money and our time and our energy than making sure cute little kids get to eat.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree.
You have one of those cute little kids your own self, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, so giving them the best that we have is just something that does the heart good.
Yes, does the heart good. Sherry, we have some callers.
Good.
I'd like to welcome Bree from San Francisco. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening, Bree.
Hey, Sherry. Hi. Just saw you.
Yes, yes. I that name was familiar.
Yes, yes.
How's it going?
Well, that's what I'm calling, but it's been really interesting. You know, I was at the retreat just recently through Sunday afternoon, and what's happening right now, which is I would love some guidance about. You know, I found that when I got back, and it is only 2 days, and things can happen very quickly. But
yes.
You know, I felt more of an opening. I felt myself more centered. I'm already hearing. I'm saying it in the past tense. And like both mornings, that back here in the city, got up and sat down and meditated because you know, that's the routine I've been doing for the past 5 days there, and feeling very very good about it. And not even it didn't matter that I couldn't always do like exactly 30 minutes. The idea that I would sit.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, just do the action and maintain that continuity.
Uh-huh.
And I've found that I have on my own been wanting and doing more regular meditation in my home and not just waiting for the Wednesday night group. So, you know, the experience of being at the monastery where there's three periods every day just really did that. And then, like, today, this afternoon, I just felt like things have crashed down. It was like, it was kind of funny. I was sitting here thinking, you know, because I think I'm more open and more available, and in my mind more capable of, like, being present for things, dealing with things I just wasn't dealing with, was trying to not just ignore before. Well, suddenly I opened myself up to all this, and I'm going along, and then later this afternoon I just felt complete overwhelm with all these clients, schedules and demands and things that have to be done, and it was like, oh my God, you know, let's go to sleep. Let's, you know, it's too much. It's just too much. And I just felt right back in this, the noise, the chaos of my mind. I can't make a decision. So the question is, or what I'm looking at is, you know, to come back in the middle of just really a lot coming at me, like all of us, I guess. I mean, just a lot to do, a lot of decisions, a lot of dealing with a lot of people, and, you know, and not feeling like, you know, I just want to leave.
I just want to go back to the monastery.
Well, that's kind of a misnomer, too, I found out. I mean, you know, the wonderful thing is, in the middle even of that beauty, the beautifulness, the quiet, and the focus, you know, that the days are so focused, at least in terms of activities. But, you know, I had nights I still didn't sleep well, and that was really interesting. Some I did, but, you know, there's a lot to deal with when you're with in the quiet.
Yeah, yeah, there is. It's different stuff, but it's still stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, my encouragement to you is just to say, okay, this is what we've got right now.
Mm.
This is it. You know, when you're getting ready to cross the street in a busy city,
uh-huh.
You can stand there and it looks like cars are going to just be coming down that street forever. And you're going to stand there until you die of old age. And then pretty soon, there's an opening. And you cross the street.
The light changes.
Yeah. And so it's the same kind of thing. So yes, there's a lot going on, and yes, it's really busy and it feels chaotic and conditioned mind is just kind of having a heyday. And you just say, okay, well, that's what we've got right now. It's just really big and busy, and pretty soon it won't be. It's bound to settle down. And when it settles down, I'll be here, and I'll notice that, and I'll enjoy it.
So when it is all chaotic, or it does seem chaotic, and there's going on though, what I get kind of overwhelmed is the word. It's like because I feel just like thing, you know, everything's like coming in at me, and it kind of, you know, the deer in the headlight type thing. Like I can't handle all the energies too much. It's too much.
Yeah. So I can't handle it, so what I need to do when it gets like this is just breathe.
Okay.
I'm not even going to try to handle it. I'm just going to breathe.
That's where I go. There's that feeling of, well, of course you have to handle it and make decisions now.
We talked about that you voice, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you have to handle it right now. You have to make a decision right here when everything is chaotic and miserable and you hate it and you can't stand it, and just say, well, actually, no, I don't.
Right.
What I need to do right now is just breathe. I'm just going to breathe until things calm down a little bit. And they will calm down a little bit.
Yeah.
And so if you train yourself exactly the opposite of what conditioning wants us to do, conditioned mind wants us to just get in this fever state and feel all this anxiety and pressure and then do something and then feel bad about having done the wrong thing.
Well, that or just give up.
Yeah.
You know?
So if you say, okay, when it gets like this, what I need to do is just breathe and calm down and be quiet and let the chaos pass, and then when things settle down a little bit, then I'll act.
This is good because, you know, I had the inclination or the thought to just go take a walk, and then what came up, and I'm really seeing it now with what you just said, there was such a strong body feeling of, no, you cannot do that.
Yeah.
There was, yeah, you cannot do that.
That's right. So you're catching on to that.
Yeah, so but the inclination was right.
Yes. Your impulse, your intuition was right, and then the voices of conditioning come in, no, you can't do that.
Right. Yeah,
the more you...
There's a lot of judgment with conditioning. It's not responsible. You have to. People are expecting something of you.
Yeah, and if you get it, that all of that is just to make you suffer.
Yes.
Then...
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, there it is. You know, the insurance company calls and says, you have to buy now. If you don't, something awful is going to happen, and you're not going to be insured, and you're not going to... You know, people are just conditioned to get into a panic and do whatever they're told to do. So if we teach ourselves to say, when there's that kind of pressure, that anxiety, that pushing, that the threat, then what I need to do is just start taking nice, long, slow breaths and calm down and get present, because I'm getting scammed.
Yeah,
I'm going to buy something that I'm sorry I bought.
You know, and what that does, of course, is then I'm choosing. I'm directing myself, not what the voices are telling me.
That's right. You're not just reacting.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very good.
Good. Thank you so much.
Keep practicing.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us, Bree. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, the callers are stacked up here.
Very good.
I'd like to welcome Jennifer from Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, it sounds kind of similar to, I think, what the other caller was experiencing, although sort of different content. Just I actually thought I was going to be able to go to the retreat last week, and then I wasn't able to, and so I got a lot, I've been getting just a lot of messages of I'm kind of falling apart, and if I had gone to the retreat, I would have been okay, and now I'm just, I can't make it without more support from practice, and I can see that it's voices, and I'm choosing to believe them, but I'm still believing them, and I'm just having a really rough time, kind of falling apart at work, really letting things go, and just feeling, you know, pretty horrible, just believing a lot of voices that, you know, I shouldn't be alive and all this stuff, and it's just seeming really true and real right now.
And so what you got from listening to the previous caller, she was at the retreat.
Yeah.
Right? And 2 days home, and the voices are just as intent on pounding her into the ground as yours are pounding you into the ground. That's just what they do.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so was that helpful to hear that encouragement to, when it's like this, that job one is just breathe? Whatever job two is, we'll know what that is as soon as we catch our breath and get calmed down a little bit. Then whatever action there is to take will become apparent to us. But what we need to do is break the cycle of panic and hysteria.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just amazing how quickly it's closing over for me, because even I had sort of a moment of listening to the other caller and being kind of, yeah, okay. And then, you know, like, before she was even finished talking, I just felt right back to, well, that's not true for you. I mean, I can see that I'm getting so stuck in this. And
the you voices.
Right, yeah, right.
Yeah? That's not true for you.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's such, you know, it's a subtle place when we're inside it. And it's just critical. It is critical that we learn to recognize that voice referring to us as you, as what it is. It's conditioning, it's self-hatred, and it's there to make you miserable. What other conclusion can we reach? So there you are in a fair degree of suffering.
Yeah.
And for a moment, you have a little respite. And a voice comes in and says, yeah, but that's not true for you.
Yeah.
You need to go back to the suffering because you shouldn't be able to just breathe and relax and be present. You've got to be in this state of anxiety and be miserable. Could anybody be confused that this is some sort of coach? You know, somebody who's trying to make your life better?
Yeah.
And yet when we're in it, when we're inside and we are the person who is in relationship to that voice, that person really believes it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, no, it's not true. And we've got to learn to hear that it's not true. There's a voice there that's trying to cause you to suffer.
Yeah, and it's succeeding because I keep kind of falling for it. And there's, you know, I'm trying not to get stuck in content, but at work I'm responsible for kind of one part of a program, and then other people are responsible for another part. And my part is doing really badly. It has, you know, no successes and no people, and it's really failing. And this other program has like hundreds of people, and so every day that I go in, you know, I'm getting so many voices about that, and I just feel like crushed. Even I'll try to sit and I'll try to be, you know, somewhat centered or something going in, and then as soon as I see these, you know, just millions of people at that other program and mine having nothing, I'm taking it really personally, and that sort of all seems connected, that I'm just, you know, this loser, and it's all
so
into it.
How does it work? Do you have a boss, a supervisor?
Yeah, I have a supervisor, yeah.
Okay, and do you ask your supervisor what you could do about this, or what should you do, or what does this mean, or should you be taking it personally? Is it personal? Does it mean you're a loser, or might there be some other components involved?
Yeah, I have talked with her. She's actually, it was sort of bad timing. I was away for a little while with some family stuff, and then part of the time thinking I was getting ready for the retreat, and then she is now away. So we've been missing each other, but of course I am also getting guilt about that, like it's my fault for missing this time of the family emergencies and these different things. So I haven't been able to really connect with her very well, which feeds into it's more my fault because I haven't been at work enough to be making this program be successful. So,
In other words, what's going on in every aspect of your life? You are in an intimate relationship with an abuser.
Yeah.
And you go everywhere together, and the abuser uses every moment of your life as an opportunity to find something wrong with you and abuse you over it.
Yeah.
You got to stop inviting that person along.
Yeah.
Can you see that?
Not that much, and that's why it seems really, a little scary right now, too. I mean, I know there's, logical sense in what you're saying, but right now it just feels true. Well, this is my fault, and this program's going downhill because of me, and I have a sense of, logically what you're saying, but it's like it's not even coming in because the voices just have such a stronghold right now.
And so what would you do if somebody else were in your position and you were advising them? What would you tell them?
I don't know. I guess just to, just do the best they could with, this program, just to do...
Yeah, but you're in content.
Yeah, I am in content.
Yeah. So you have a friend who is in an abusive relationship.
I have in the past, yeah.
What would you advise that friend?
Yeah, I've told them, get away.
Better meals.
What?
Just cook better meals. Just lose weight. Just do your hair a better way.
No, I've said, get the heck away from this and get out and, don't tolerate that from someone. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And yet, you are locked into this abusive relationship. And your reaction to it is, well, there's really nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, because everything it's saying seems like I sort of deserve to...
Yeah, so if your friend in this relationship and the abusive partner is saying, you're really overweight and you're unattractive, and the reason I treat you this way is because you just don't take care of yourself and you don't try, would you say to your friend, oh, well, yeah, I mean, you are overweight.
Yeah, no.
So, in other words, what you could see if it were your friend is it doesn't matter what's going on with you, it's not okay to be abused.
Yeah.
So even if you are absolutely failing at this program,
yeah,
it is not okay to be abused.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes. Abused people are not more inspired.
Right. I can see it's just draining my energy to even do something to maybe have success, too.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So, now, there's nothing I can do for you.
Yeah.
Right? I can tell you, this is an abusive relationship. It has nothing to do with who you are or what you're doing. Whatever you do, there is never a justification for abuse.
Mm-hmm.
But only you can decide not to be in an abusive relationship. And you know that with your friend.
Yes.
Right? You can't go over and move her out of the house. She's the only one who can say, no, it is not okay to treat me this way.
Yeah.
And that's the place that you've got to get to. I can't do that for you. Nobody can.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of, that's helpful to hear, too, because then, you know, I've also kind of believed the voices that have said, well, if you would just, you know, if you lived closer and could get to the monastery or get more practice, you know, then it would all change and then
nope.
you'd be okay. But, you know,
nope.
probably regardless of where I am, I need to do this. And
the you voice is abusive.
Yeah.
And what it's telling you in that is how what you're experiencing is your fault.
Yes.
The truth is what you're experiencing is its fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those hateful messages make you anxious, make you insecure, drain your energy, depress you, make you miserable. The hateful messages do that, not who you are. And no matter what you do, no matter how you fix yourself or change your life, it will not affect those hateful voices. So the only answer is get out of the relationship. And only you can do that.
Okay.
Only you can say no to the abuse. In the same way that if it were an addiction to alcohol, only you can stop drinking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's every time it comes up, just dropping it, just not listening to it and
That's
not
right.
engaging with it.
That's right. You could tell yourself, I do not want my life to go in a direction of hate.
Yeah.
Hate never leads to anything good.
Yeah.
Yep. Hateful, ugly, mean messages are never going to make me a good person. No, thank you. I'm already a good person. The only thing keeping me from realizing that is you. So stop. Stop it. Stop it.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And they'll drag you down again, and you'll come back to the breath, and you'll breathe, and you'll remind yourself, download this. Okay? Get it on your iPod or your computer or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Okay? And listen to it. Listen to it again and again and again and again and again.
Yeah.
And let it be support. Let it give you strength to say to that voice, no, I'm not. No, I'm not listening. I'm a good person. I'm doing the very best I can. I'm working really hard. I'm trying really hard. And the only difficulty I'm having in life is you.
Okay.
No, our relationship has gone on way too long. It's time to end it. No more abusive relationship for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah, thank you so much.
And let us know. Keep in touch, okay?
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jennifer. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to take a quick break now, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Coming up next on Open Air in our second half of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness, and we'll be taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we've got more callers.
Michael,
Yes, Sherry.
Would you ask the powers that be to make you louder, please?
Okay.
You are almost inaudible.
Almost inaudible. Powers that be to make me louder. Okay, great.
Thank you.
Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Shanta from San Francisco. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Shanta, how are you? Hello?
Shanta, are you there?
Shanta is really quiet.
Very quiet. Very quiet. Just one second. Oh, we have another caller. I'd like to welcome Bob from San Francisco. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening, Bob.
Good evening. Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
The reason I'm calling is that I'm calling to report a little bit of a success with conditioning. I think both or one of you at least probably know that my brother died a few weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when my mom died last year, I heard pretty clearly that there was a particular way to grieve, and I wasn't doing it.
Mm.
And luckily, I sort of caught conditioning pretty quickly. I mean, I was really believed it for a period of time, but once I saw it, it was pretty much gone. And that was really helpful when my brother died, because I sort of saw the same message, but I wasn't identified with it.
Uh-huh.
I've heard other people talk about this, even once having really gotten past a piece of conditioning, it still goes on.
Yes. If it has another opportunity, it'll be right back there knocking at the door.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right. And, but the other piece I saw is that that I could have my experience and other people could have theirs. Now, saying that, it sounds kind of odd.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I really saw that, through the experience after my brother dies, I kept seeing or hearing people say things that just didn't jive with my view of the world and of life. And, someone said, because he had a heart transplant about 19 months before he died. And someone said, well, you know, why did he have to go through all that only to die 19 months later? And it just didn't compute for me.
Yeah.
Yes, I thought, my God, he got 19 more months with his kids.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, if you asked him, he would have gone through anything in order to have those 19 months.
Right. Uh-huh. And at the same time, I didn't feel any in opposition.
Mm-hmm.
To views like that, or the people who were saying them, and I don't know, it just felt like a really peaceful place. I mean, it was all very hard, and in some ways continues to be, but it just felt like just a very open, peaceful place to be able to be in a place where I could be and have my experience. And not feel like I needed to do anything to negate anyone else's experience.
Yes. You didn't have to convince anybody, argue with anybody, tell them about your experience particularly.
Uh-huh.
It just all is what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right.
Within that, it's painful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know, and it was, I don't know, there was something... Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that I really sort of found some sort of comfort in the fact that I didn't know anything.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know whether this was a right or wrong thing that happened.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know, you know, particularly what to say at a particular moment. And that even that what other people might be saying that I didn't feel right to me, I wasn't necessarily wrong.
It right.
Certainly wasn't wrong for them.
Yes. 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 To me, what you're describing is being present.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, we talk about the difference between pain and suffering.
Uh-huh.
Pain is being with what is, all of it as it is. Suffering is when you decide there's something wrong with what is.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the one feels much, it just feels clean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what it seemed to be able to do, for me at least, was it allowed me to first be present for myself and then be present for anyone else.
Uh-huh. In that sense of not needing to interfere anyway with whatever their experience is.
Right.
You didn't need to insert your experience into their experience.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and to especially for like my father and my sister, who to be able to support them just by supporting them.
Mm-hmm.
Like not bring anything to that other than offering to be there.
Yes. Yes.
And yet,
I'm hearing that it's not just being there; it's being there as an accepting presence.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because only by sort of like being in a place where it was all okay with me. You know, the things there wasn't anything wrong,
mm-hmm.
and it freed me to be supportive in a way that was both supportive of them and then also not negating me.
Yes, yes. So, again, to tie it back in with practice, when we talk about the place that is most compassionate for all, to me, that's what you're describing.
Right, right. Yeah. So I mean, it was just. As difficult as it has been, I mean, it just there isn't any other way I would have chosen to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed like that just. Conditioning just wasn't a piece of the puzzle, and I'm just really grateful to practice for that, because I've been in the same place when conditioning has been all that it's been about.
Uh-huh.
And it makes it just awful.
Yes, it makes something that is a natural part of life into hell.
Right.
And of course, that's what conditioning is doing all the time. That's kind of its focus, no matter what life is presenting. But there are these kinds of life events that we have been deeply conditioned to believe are wrong, and that we have to suffer over, and we have to have really strong opinions about. And there's, as you said, there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it, and how you do it says everything about who you are. And to just watch all of that fall away and simply be with what is as it is.
Right.
Yeah.
And I also had a real strong sense of, being adequate to the moment. Because it felt like when I've been really identified, that it seems like anything is possible except feeling adequate in that moment.
Uh-huh.
And so looking outward, but really sort of looking to conditioning for how I needed to be.
Yeah.
And just feeling a real freedom, and once again, in like how, being able to look to myself, to whatever, whatever was happening in that place of center at whatever moment it was, for my clue, and not looking outward or to conditioning.
Yeah. Yeah. And just when you said that, I saw kind of this way for the first time, that when we're identified, of course we feel inadequate.
Right.
Inadequacy is attempting to be there doing whatever it is. We're identified with an illusion of a separate self. That is the definition of inadequacy. So, yes, of course, it would feel awful.
Yeah.
And feeling awful and inadequate like that is proof that it really is awful and terrible and a horrible thing, and I'm a terrible person, and it's all wrong. And the just that little movement out of identification and into center, and all of that falls away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And from that place, it seemed like so much more is possible.
Uh-huh. Well, as you say, for you and for everyone around you.
Right. Right.
Such a gift.
Yeah.
Just be able to be with people and be all right with whatever is going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, thanks, Sherry.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Congratulations. It's a lot of work to get to an experience like that, and it is so worth it, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Bob.
Okay, thanks. Thanks,
take
Michael.
Care.
Thanks,
bye.
Bob. Thanks. It's Bob. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome William from Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening,
Hello.
William.
Hi, Sherry. How are you?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
I'm actually struggling. I spoke to you a couple times recently, specifically about, I had questions about the mentor relationship. But I'd actually tonight like to talk about something a little, it's related, obviously, but I kind of want to expand the topic a little bit. And I also find that when I call in, I mean, I've been thinking numerous times about speaking with you about this, and it seems like once I actually get on the phone, my brain goes to mush a little bit, and I'm not quite sure how to express it all. But I guess a few details are, I may have mentioned that I've been kind of going through a depression.
Uh-huh.
It's not something I haven't gone through before. I see the repetitiveness of this in previous parts of my life. This one's a little different because I think I'm a lot more conscious, becoming a lot more aware and looking at things. So this one has a slightly different flavor, but I'm seeing a lot of the same patterns. And really struggling, obviously, mornings have been tough, lots of anxiety, little panicky feelings. A lot of times that can kind of follow me through the day. And I guess I want to mention, if possible, just a little bit of the content right now has to do, it feels like a source of it, is my relationship with my family of origin.
Uh-huh.
And I think the first time I called in, I had said that I was it's actually been the last couple years now, I've had a lot more contact with them than I had previously. And I think I'm finding myself falling back into almost like an enmeshment. There's a real sense of blurred boundaries in my family, and I've always kind of felt a little bit unsafe with my family. And these last couple years, my younger brother has wanted to put together sort of a business that I have been working with him on. And I'm finding I've never been quite clear about how I want to be involved. I kind of feel like I get drawn in, I kind of get lost, and a lot of the old beliefs which follow me around, ones about, like, I can't take care of myself, I'm dependent, this is, I think, why I was kind of talking to you earlier about the mentor relationship, is that I've had these beliefs following me most of my life, but they're really coming at me now. These ideas that I don't know how to take care of myself, that, actually messages I kind of even recall hearing from some family members when I was growing up, that I was, that I'm a loser. And,
wow.
And
well, no wonder you're drawn to these people.
Yeah, Yeah. It seems like in some ways I'm falling into this project with my brother as a way to kind of prove myself to the family or to somehow belong or show that I can do it. And I mean, I guess another kind of crazy-making thing for me is, which I've never been able to be calm with or kind of resolve in myself, is I really kind of went a different pathway than my kind of other members of my family. And my dad was a surgeon, my two older brothers are doctors, and then I kind of have done nothing at all that, you know, developed and prestigious. I've kind of done kind of a mishmash of different experiences, and yet I also kind of grew up as kind of the most academically successful, so I kind of felt like I kind of internalized the sense that I was kind of supposed to be the most successful, and I kind of have this experience where I'm like the least successful.
So you had messages that you're a loser with an expectation that you would be the most successful.
Yeah.
That's hard to go in both those directions at once, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually, I've definitely internalized those. I mean, I expect myself to be, quite capable, or at least want to live up to that somehow. And then at the same time, these messages that I believe inside me that somehow, can't do it. And I think there's many layers to this, actually. When I, the more I look at it, there's key experiences I think I had that kind of really frightened me a little bit about other people's reactions. Kind of my dad's kind of rageful anger, and then that kind of maybe reinforced by some school experiences with teachers and so forth when I was quite young. And it seems like I freeze up. I mean, I'm always worried about how other people are going to react, and I kind of lose who I am and what I want, and I seem to be focused on how to keep a situation okay. And
now, do you know that what you're actually afraid of is not other people? That what you're actually afraid of is that judgmental voice in your head?
That's becoming more clear to me, yeah. It's hard to, in the moment, I think someone earlier talked about the whole deer in the headlights type reaction, and I find that, I like my brain goes to mush a lot of times when I'm in those situations, and it seems like, especially if somebody's starting to get upset, and it's hard. Now I can kind of say, okay, I could see that I don't need to be afraid of them, and it's just the voice in my head that I need to be concerned with, and I guess come back to the breath and things like that, but I guess I have not had much success in real situations yet with that.
Uh-huh. And let me ask you this. When you're out in the rest of your life, do you find yourself often in relationships where people are getting visibly upset and upset with you and that sort of thing, or does that mostly happen in your family?
No, I've seen how I repeat it in jobs. Like a job I had about a year ago, I was there for 5 years, and it was in a sort of an abusive relationship. The owners were real sort of abusive of my time and angry. Always act, kind of with anger, kind of to control and things like that. And then even romantic relationships where I wasn't treated, kind of a lot of anger coming at me and criticism. And I do find that I repeat it out in the world. That's what really concerns me. I want to break that pattern.
Uh-huh. And do you feel that the best way to break that pattern is by staying in close relationship with your family?
I've kind of wavered between thinking that it's just not a good idea because of my family and because of my history with them to just... I've often thought that maybe this is just a bad mix, and then there's other times I feel like this is a challenge that I've got to work, I've got to resolve this, you know, I've got to work through it with them, you know, it's bringing up all
these... Let me ask you this. Does it feel addictive? Could you not be enmeshed in that family dynamic?
I would say it probably does feel a bit addictive. I find it really just kind of my role in the family and how I got my sense of worth in the family. It's just really, I find it very hard to detach from that when I'm, especially when I'm around them.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, that what keeps this karmic identity in place. You might go around in the world and not have a consistent experience of this sort of, this is who William is.
Right.
But by staying involved with your family, you're sure to be able to maintain it.
Right. And it's not necessarily that by trying to go beyond it with my family, that's going to heal me. I don't need to do it with my family. Is that kind of what you're saying? I mean,
yes. In fact, I would suggest that the way not to do it is to stay in this kind of dynamic with your family.
Right.
Do you do therapy?
Yeah, I'm working with a therapist, and actually just recently he's been, encouraging me to kind of, I'm kind of recording myself trying to express stuff I want to say to my family, I guess about my experience with this or what I want to do, and I'm not quite sure where it's headed. I'm not sure if this is because I'm trying to stay in the family or if I'm trying to...
Okay, yeah, I hear the music. Here's your homework. Are you ready for it?
Yeah.
Okay, I want you to come up with a schedule for the amount of time and interaction you're going to have with these folks for the next month. And I want you to call me and tell me what it is.
Okay, Sharon.
All right?
Thank you. All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, William. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael.
Do it again next week.
Talk to you then.
Okay.
Good night.